fans, this is Jenny Coco here, and I just watched episode 3 of Outlander for season 3. The episode is entitled All Debts Paid, and I'm just going to give a little brief, summary and some thoughts on the episode today before the full recap that I plan to do on Wednesday. Well, it was an excellent episode. It was a very powerful episode, probably so far the most powerful of the season, for two main reasons. I'll get into that in a bit. First, just a brief summary of the episode. Starts out in 1956? Or is it 66? No, 56, I believe. Or 57, 58, I don't know. I can't remember. I'll give a more detailed synopsis. No, maybe 59. But anyway, it's in the late 50s, I believe. And Claire is in the kitchen, and her and Frank are just having breakfast, and they have a little brief discussion. Claire, I think, is feeling kind of good because she's in school. She's happy. She asks Frank if he wants to check out a movie or another movie. She makes a couple of suggestions. Frank is like, "Hey, I've already seen those." And she was like, "What?" And then she gets a look on her face, and she's like, "Oh." And he says, "Look, I'm being discreet. You know, we already agreed to this." And she's like, "Oh, okay, yeah, that's cool, So we come to the clear understanding that Frank is now leading a separate life from his wife. He has a woman, and he's taking her to the movies, not Claire. So then Brianna comes down. We can now see that she is a full 10, or however old she is. And, she's a big girl now. So, that's where we start the show. And then we jump to the prison where Jamie, flashback in the past, of course, to 1755, I believe. And Jamie has been in prison now, I believe, for about 3 years. And we see him, we're introduced to Lord John Gray. He's the new governor at the prison. If you remember, Lord John is the kid that attacked Jamie in season 2 while he was taking a piss. When he was, leading the soldiers for the Jacobites, and Jamie spared his life, and that's in turn what spared Jamie's life from being executed, in the first episode of season 3, because his brother was the captain and remembered that Jamie had spared his little brother's life, so that he sent him home to Lollybrock. Well, now Lord John is older, fully grown, and now he's the governor of this prison where Jamie is being housed. And when they first start showing the prison, Lord John is being escorted around by the current governor, who he's replacing, and the governor is telling him everything about the prison, including that Jamie is their only Jacobite prisoner who was an officer in the Jacobite War, and they call him McDew. The prisoners look up to him. He's kind of the leader of the prisoners, and that if Lord John wanted to know anything about what's going on with the prisoners, that then he needs to talk to McDew, Jamie, because Jamie is their leader. So Lord John was, of course, recognizing that Jamie was Red Jamie, the very same guy who spared his life when he was 16. But he didn't know if Jamie remembered him and wanted to keep it that way if he didn't. Then we see when Jamie goes into the prison and he sits down on this little bench area and starts talking to someone. And that person, we can't see them at first, but we can hear their voice. And the minute I heard that man's voice that he was talking to, I'm like, yes! Yes, I knew it. It was Murtaugh. Then they showed his face. He was lying down in a little area behind where Jamie was sitting, and he aged just a little bit. He's got gray in his beard now. He's not well. He's coughing a lot. He's lying down. Apparently, he's not been well since he got there. He's been struggling, but he's alive. He's there. Murtaugh is alive. Murtaugh Fitzgibbons, thank you. Thank you, Ronald D. Moore, or whoever decided to make this change from the book. I am so glad for this. Unfortunately, though, something happens a little later. I'll get into that in a bit. But still, I'm just so glad that Murtaugh is alive. So anyway, they have a little discussion about, the new governor, and Jamie's telling him that he doesn't recognize him. But I think Jamie's maybe not telling the truth for whatever reason. I don't know. Anyway, that was my brief impression of that. Anyway, Jamie and Lord John end up developing a rapport with each other. They have discussions and stuff. The scene with the old man that was wandering outside the prison happens. This is from the book, the old man who was mumbling about the French gold, and the redcoats bring the old man back to the prison. Lord John asks Jamie to translate because the old man only speaks Gaelic and French. And because they want to know where the French gold is. Well, Jamie at first refuses, but then Lord John says, "I'll take these shackles off you," because Jamie has basically been shackled the whole 3 years he's been there. He's the only one that they keep shackled because they, for some reason, think that he's very dangerous. Because Red Jamie McDo has become like a legend of like danger and evil some kind of way to these redcoats. So they keep him shackled. He's the only one that they keep shackled. So the Lord John, in order to get Jamie's cooperation for this translation thing, asks him to says that he'll take his shackles off if he cooperates. So Jamie says okay, but one other thing, the men are kind of starving. I mean, they essentially were eating rats in these cells because we're not getting enough food. And a funny thing about the rat thing, when Jamie first met Lord John, Lord John was getting ready to sit down to dinner, and a giant rat like scurries across the floor. Lord John's like, "What in the hell? We need a cat in here. Let's get a cat. And what about the cells? Do we have rats in the cells too?" He asked Jamie. Jamie was like, "Yeah, lots of rats." So he says to the redcoat private or corporal, he says, "Look, we need to get a cat in each one of these cells because this rat thing is crazy. We don't need all that." And Jamie was like, "I don't think the men are going to appreciate you having cats come in and taking all our rats." And Lord John was like, "Why are you eating the rats? That's not, surely you're not." And Jamie's like, "If we're lucky enough to catch them." So it becomes pretty clear that this is hell, and they're, not living in the best conditions. So Lord John does agree to the whole Jamie and the other men setting up traps for little game outside the walls of the prison so that they can get some decent food. I mean, they would be responsible for catching their own food. The prison guards don't have to worry about it. They would set the traps themselves. They know how to do it. They're Highlanders, for God's sake. They know how to hunt. And it would just, and it's not weapons. It would just be innocent little, snares that they would set up to catch like rabbits and whatever other small game would get caught in those traps. So anyway, Jamie does agree. Once the Lord agrees to the snares and the traps, and he takes his shackles off after 3 years of being shackled, Jamie agrees to sit with the old man and try to understand what he's saying about the French gold. The old man is babbling. He doesn't make any sense. Eventually, he starts talking about Colum and Ellen and the Silkies, and Jamie recognizes all of this because, Ellen, of course, is his mother. Colum is his uncle, and he's talking about Colum's clan, the Mackenzie clan, and how all of them are dead, and that the French gold is cursed. Then he starts talking about the White Witch. Well, that's what everyone used to refer Claire as, the White Witch, thanks to Jamie, because he, when they were in Paris, he didn't want, these people to get a bad idea about Claire. Or maybe well, at first I think he came up with the White Witch story because he was hanging out with the Bonnie Prince, and the Bonnie Prince was like this slut that was always hanging out in brothels. And Jamie had to hang with him, and everybody expected Jamie to get down with all the women, even though Jamie was married, because nobody cared about being married back then. Why would you care about being married? You're a man. You're supposed to have all the pussy you want, right? Regardless. And Jamie wanted to stay true. So he said, no, I can't mess with these women. My wife is a white witch. She'll kill me. So he came up with the white witch thing. So Claire became this mystical white witch to everybody in Paris. So when the man started calling, the old man started referring to a white witch, of course, that perked Jamie's ears up. And Jamie was like, tell me more about the white witch. And he was like, she wants a Mackenzie that's strong. She wants one that's true. She'll be back for you. And then he dies. And Jamie just kind of looked off, and he wasn't sure what that meant. The governor, Lord John, wanted to know what the old man said. Jamie was like, he was just rambling about silkies and witches. I don't know. And Lord John was like, you're keeping something from me. Jamie was like, no, I keep my oaths. I told you I'd tell you what he said, and I told you that's it. So anyway, they finally get out to the out in the open to catch their game that they set up in their traps and snares. The redcoats walked the prisoners out in like a chain gang, or well, they weren't chained together, but they were just lined up and stuff, and they were allowed to go out to catch their game or to check their traps for the game. And the prisoners ran off as a diversion to run to their traps, and the redcoats kind of chased them with their weapons on them. Hey, don't run off anywhere. We got our weapons on you. So while the redcoats were distracted with the prisoners checking the traps, Jamie takes off in the opposite direction because he notices no one's watching him. He's got two other prisoners helping him run off to a little area where apparently they had dug a hole disguised as a snare trap. And Jamie jumps in, and the two prisoners that help him cover him up with grass and then run back and get in line. And the redcoats are none the wiser. So Jamie escapes. He's gone for 3 days. When he comes back on his own, though, he catches Lord John out taking a piss outside, and he sneaks up on him and covers his mouth with his hand. He said, that's how you do it. Because in reflection of what he had done, what Lord John had done with Jamie back when he was his 16-year-old self, tried to attack Jamie while Jamie was taking a piss, and Jamie ended up breaking his arm. Well, when Jamie snuck up on Lord John, he did it properly and managed to catch him off guard and get his sword from him. So Jamie then says to Lord John, do you remember what you promised? Jamie lets Lord John at this point know that he knows who he is. He might have been pretending that he didn't know, but he know. He recognized him from before, and that he was a 16-year-old that he had found in the woods and had let go. And Jamie takes his sword, stands in front of him, and says, do you know what you promised me? And Lord John was like, what? And Jamie stuck the sword in his sword in the ground, got on his knees, and said, you promised to kill me. Well, here I am. So he got on his knees and prepared for Lord John to kill him. Lord John took his sword, put it against Jamie's neck, and said, I don't kill unarmed prisoners. So he put his sword away. So then they show that Lord John and Jamie kind of become friendly. They play chess, they eat dinner. Lord John lets Jamie eat pheasant. Jamie goes back to the prison with the men and describe how he's had this delicious food, and the poor prisoners are just listening to him like he's talking about porn. It's very funny when they're all kind of crowded around him as he's describing the succulent peasant and the carrots. I mean, a pheasant and the carrots. And one of them says, slow down, describe that again. I want to get the real taste of it. So that was cute. And that's from the book too. I thought that was fun. But anyway, long story short, eventually they end up closing the prison. Lord John, as Jamie and Lord John become closer, Jamie is able to get favors from Lord John. One of the favors he gets is a doctor for Murtaugh, because Murtaugh's not well. So a doctor ends up coming in for Murtaugh and helping him out. He gets treatments over a series of months, and he does well after that. So that's good. But by the time the prison closes, so Murtaugh is good, but Murtaugh is going to be sent away with the other prisoners because the prison is closing, and Murtaugh and the other prisoners are being sent to the colonies. The colonies, of course, is like the early version of America. And so he's being shipped off to freaking America. They're being separated again. But at least they've been together for 3 years. At least Jamie did not have to do prison by himself. He had Murtaugh, his godfather, with him the whole time. That's good. I appreciate that. Because in the book, he was utterly, well, not he, I mean, he, there were lots of his clansmen there in the prison with him in the book, so he wasn't alone. And the whole thing with the McDo and them respecting him and treating him almost like an officer while they were in prison, that all was in the book too. But still, Jamie didn't really have he didn't really have like a partner, like a friend, like Murtaugh in the prison. So it was nice that they added that in this book so that it didn't seem quite as dark and desolate as it was in the book. So I appreciated that. Thank goodness for that. But anyway, Murtaugh and the rest of the prisoners get sent to the colonies after the prison closes, and Jamie is taken elsewhere with Lord John. Now, mind you, Jamie at this point had had a falling out with Lord John, and the falling out was when they had one of these little dinners or chess playing matches that they had been having, and like I said, they had developed a nice rapport with each other. But Lord John, I think, gets a little too comfortable and starts telling Jamie a story, because Jamie had told him finally about his wife and Claire, and reveals that Claire was the woman from that night when Lord John had attacked him. Jamie had revealed that the woman that he pretended to ravish in order to get Lord John to cooperate with them and tell them where the redcoats were, it was actually his wife. So Lord John was like, "Oh, that was your wife. Oh, so you tricked me into, that, making me think that you were about to savage this woman when actually that was your wife and you were pretending." So he thought that was funny and decided to open up to Jamie about someone that he cared about that he lost at Culloden. And he, in not so many words, revealed that this person that he lost was his lover, indicating that he is gay. Which, Jamie didn't appear to have a problem with. Like, okay, you gay, whatever. Until Lord John decides to put his hand on Jamie's hand and kind of touch him a little too intimately. And Jamie gets this look on his face like, "If you don't move your hand, I will kill you." 'Cause look, Jamie has had enough of some damn men coming on to him in prison, okay? He had plenty of that in Outlander season one, and we won't get into that, but all of you who are familiar with the story know what I'm talking about. So at any rate, Lord John slowly removes his hand. He's horrified. He feels stupid. Jamie gets up, walks out. Lord John has tears coming out of his eyes. So we get the pretty serious impression here that after all these months of him and Jamie connecting with each other, that Lord John has developed feelings for Jamie. But Jamie is not a gay man, so his feelings were rebuffed. Quite frankly, I'm glad that Jamie didn't go off a little bit harder, which this is how it happens in the book as well. He doesn't, I mean, he's in prison. This is the governor. He can't attack him. They'd kill him, but I think Jamie's at a point now that if Lord John had gone further, he would be dead. So, and Jamie wouldn't give a fuck. Like, kill me, I don't care. I ain't letting no man do that to me again. So anyway, so when the prison closes and Lord John has to take Jamie elsewhere other than the colonies, Jamie doesn't understand. He wants to go with Murtaugh to the colonies if that's where they're going, if that's where the other prisoners are going. So he doesn't understand, as he's being tied to the back of a horse that Lord John is riding, and led away somewhere else. And Lord John doesn't say exactly where they're going. Jamie doesn't really want to talk to him because of that whole incident. So basically, you have this long scene of Jamie being very, it just looks so terrible that he's tied by his wrist to the back of this horse. He's made to walk behind the horse while Lord John rides, and it looks like they're traveling for days. And eventually, Lord John says, "We've been traveling for 3 days. You will have to talk to me at some point." And Jamie said, "This is slavery." And Lord John was like, "No, this is indentured servitude. It's not the same as slavery. We're not going to get into that. I'm not going to even start with that. I have some opinions on it, but I'm not going to start with it. But I do agree." Anyway, so at this point, Lord John gets off his horse, and they have apparently arrived at the place where Jamie will now be, you know, like a stable person for some sort of duke or something. And Jamie was like, "Why are you bringing me here? Why do I get to come here instead of being sent with the other men to the colonies?" And Lord John was like, "This is the best. I can't set you free. I would like to set you free, but I can't. This is the best that I can do." And Jamie's like, "Why?" And Lord John said, "Because I owe you your life, and I hope you use it well, since you spared mine." And Jamie's like, "Your brother already spared my life for you." And Lord John was like, "He did that for my family's name. I'm doing this for me." He said, "I'll check on you every quarter to see how you're doing." So, you know, that's the end of that. So that's pretty much the end of Jamie in this episode. As far as Claire is concerned, they jump forward, you know, a few years to Brianna's birthday, where she's blowing out the candles on her cake. And we see that Frank and Claire are, you know, I don't know, still kind of living these separate lives. Then they jump forward another period where, you know, Frank and Claire attend Brianna's graduation. And this night, when they attend her graduation, is a night where they have kind of a... No, I don't think the graduation night was all that special. But jump forward a few years. No, wait a minute. I'm skipping something. I'm sorry. Something that I'm skipping. I've only seen the show once, and I'm kind of trying to remember what I saw. Oh, yeah. There was a moment when Claire graduated from college, and this is when Brianna was still fairly young, like maybe 10 or so, or around that age. And Claire had a graduation party. Joe Abernathy was there because they both graduated at the same time. Apparently her and Joe have become good buddies, which is great, just like I had said in the last episode. And also, that's what happens in the books. They become really good friends. And so he's there, and Brianna is taking their picture and stuff. And there's a little party going on. There's several invited guests. Looks like a good dozen or so people are there. And they're all supposed to go out to dinner. But Frank says he can't go because he's got work stuff. And Brianna was like, "Well, Daddy, if you don't go, I don't want to go either." And Clara's like, "Come on, Bri. This is Mommy's, you know, celebration dinner." But it's made clear in this scene that Brianna has a closer relationship to her dad than she does to her mom. But, you know, that was made clear last season when Brianna pretty much said as much. Anyway, the doorbell rings as they're, you know, kind of, you know, fellowshipping or, you know, having this little celebration. And Claire goes to the door and answers it. There's a woman outside. Claire smiles. "Hi, may I help you?" And the woman has this frozen, petrified look on her face. You know, and Frank comes up behind Claire, and he looks at the woman. The woman looks at him. Claire looks back at Frank, and then looks at this woman and realizes, oh, this is Frank's boo thing. Okay. Brianna had come and tried to see what was going on, and Frank told her to go play. Claire goes back into the living room with her guests and says, "Okay, everybody, why don't we just go to dinner now? And if we're early, we'll just hang out at the bar until we can get a table." So they kind of file past Frank and his boo thing, and Frank's boo thing is looking mortified. Apparently, Frank gave her the wrong time to come because, you know, maybe he was trying to make Claire look fucked up, because, you know, he had said that he was trying to be discreet. Well, this was the absolute opposite of discreet. So later that evening, when Claire is back from her celebration, she's drinking alone in the living room. Frank comes home drunk, and Claire says, "You deliberately did that. You invited that hoe over here deliberately to embarrass me in front of my new colleagues." And Frank was like, "Woman, please. Now you know how it feels. So you think all those folks at Harvard, that where I work, believe that we're happily married?" And Claire was like, "What are you talking about?" And he's like, "You're not as good an actor as you think you are. Okay, nobody believes that we're happily married. Everybody knows that we're living separate lives. It is not a secret, you know." And Claire is like, "Okay, you know what? If you're that unhappy, why don't you just file for divorce?" He said, "Oh, yeah, file for divorce and lose my daughter?" He said, "Not going to happen. I had a friend who filed for divorce, and the judge said that kids belong with their mothers more than they belong with their fathers. So he only sees his kids once in a while now. I'm not going to let that happen to me and Brianna." So Claire looks, and Claire says, "I wouldn't let that happen." He says, "I don't believe nothing you say. You don't keep your promises." So, you know, Claire's frustrated, Frank's frustrated, and it's clear that both of them just feel completely and totally trapped in this situation, and they are just unhappy and miserable as all get out. So then we flash forward some years where they see Brianna growing up, 16th birthday, graduation. Then they come to this point where Frank comes home one evening and Claire is sitting in her living room looking stressed out, you know, and Frank, you know, asks her if she's had a tough day at the hospital. And she says, "Yeah, but, you know, same old, same old." He's like, "Yeah." He tries to make it pleasant. And then he says, "You know, Claire, I would like to take Bree to England." And Claire's like, "Oh, okay. So for how long?" He's like, "Well, I got a job offer at Cambridge. And, you know, so this would be long term." And Claire's like, "Cambridge? What about my job? What about everything that I got going on here?" Frank's like, I'm not asking you to go. I want a divorce." And Claire, you know, was like, "Okay. What about Brianna?" "Well, she'll come and live with me." And Claire's like, "Oh, no, that's not happening." And he's like, "Look, you're working all the time. You're always at the hospital. You're barely here." And she's like, "That is not happening. You are not taking my daughter away from me. That is my daughter." "And what about your boo thing?" He says, "Well, me and Helen," or whatever her name is, Claire said, "What about Candy?" And he said, "Her name is Sandy. And she and I will get married as soon as I'm free." And she's like, "You have been waiting to do this, haven't you? You've just been lying in wait to do this." He's like, "Look, we're both miserable, you know, and this is my chance to have a wife that actually loves me. You still in love with that man from 1700s. So if you want to still live like that, that's cool. But it's time for me to move on and finally have a life with someone that loves me." So he goes and she's like, "Well, I'm going to fight it, you know, and I have adultery against you. So if you want to take my daughter, just try it." And he's like, "You should be reasonable." And, you know, but he goes and he gets his keys, makes it pretty clear that that's what's going to happen. And he leaves. Claire gets a phone call that she needs to be at surgery at the hospital. And she goes to the hospital. They flash forward to her having performed the surgery, and now she's talking to a husband, I guess, of the person that she operated on. And she's comforting him, telling him that all he could do now is wait, that everything went well with the surgery, and now you just have to kind of wait it out and see what happens. So she gives the husband a nice comforting hug and lets him go off to the waiting room. And as she's letting the husband go off to the waiting room, Joe Abernathy comes toward her looking very grim. He says, "Claire, it's Frank. There's been a car accident." So Claire looks kind of struck, and then she starts running down the hall towards this area where apparently Frank is, and he's in the room on a slab with a sheet pulled up to his neck, and he's gone. Now, I must say, Frank looks good for someone that's been in a car accident. I mean, not a scratch on him. He just looked like he was lying there asleep, hair perfectly coiffed, not a scratch, not a bruise, not a spot of blood on that white sheet that was covering him up. But they start playing this dramatic music, and Claire sits down next to him. It's very sad because this is it for Tobias on the show. Black Jack Randall is dead, and now Frank is dead. So that's it for Tobias. And what a melancholy and kind of unceremonious end, but still, that's kind of how it happens in the book too. One minute Frank is there, next minute Frank is gone. So they kind of put it the same way in the show. So rest in peace, Frank and Blackjack. But fuck Blackjack, nobody cares about him. But rest in peace, Frank, and Godspeed. Job well done to Tobias Menzies. I will continue to follow him because he's a great actor, and I just think that he's a really good guy. That's it for the summary. I got probably a lot more detail than I had intended to get, but it was a great episode. Like I said, the most powerful of the season. I can't wait to see what happens with, Murtaugh is now gone to the colonies, so he and Jamie are going to be separated. Let's hope they are reconnected at some point. That is my hope. That is my hope. That is my hope. And Jamie is now working at this Duke's house, and going to be a stable and basically an indentured servant, which, if you know anything about indentured servants, Scots, Irish, I think, were sort of like white slaves, to be honest with you, back in those days after, you know, the British won the war. And this is historical, you know, factualness. Is that a word? And you know, and I'm not going to get into the whole indentured service versus slaves thing. Of course, there is a difference between indentured servants and slaves, but there's not a whole big, large difference, to be honest with you, because indentured servants were not free to go and come as they pleased. They were not free. They did not have the ability to leave when they wanted. They were basically prisoners and forced and unpaid, doing what they had to do, usually because they were prisoners, and this was kind of like, it's kind of like work release when you're a prisoner, and it's work release program. So that's kind of what indentured servants were, and that's what Jamie is now going to be at this Duke Dunsany, I think it is. At the Duke's castle, Duke Dunsany, I believe, if I'm getting that right. So in next episode, I guess we'll get more of that. Now, I'm still planning to do my more detailed episode of this on Wednesday. I don't know. I got so detailed in this one, I might just let this one stand as it is. We'll see how this goes. We'll see how I feel. But thanks for tuning in, guys. Please tune in on Wednesday and see what's going on then. And I'll catch you guys next time. Bye-bye.